evening, everybody. I'm going to release this one tonight. You know what? I just did a whole 30-minute podcast. Literally, I did it. Maybe I'll release it on my Patreon because, you know, and I finished it up and I just, you know what? You just don't feel good about something. Whatever it is, you just get that feeling. It's like this, that sucked. I don't want to be associated with that. And that's what happened. And so I am literally at 6 p.m. on a Monday night going, I'm just redoing it. I'm going to try to be a little more cleaner, a little more thought provoking, and we'll see how it goes. But that one is dead to me, just like game three should be dead to the Buffalo Sabres, because coming into game three, Buffalo needed to respond. This series went exactly how I thought it was going to go. Game one, Montreal came in Buffalo, maybe a little too, you know, celebratory. They were drinking their own Kool-Aid. They just beat Tampa Bay in game seven. Maybe the focus wasn't there. They had just, you know, slayed the dragon, got the monkey off their back, and they didn't really have a monkey on their back. But coming off of that, and I talked about that going into game one, it's a lot for a player to stay focused and maintain that high. And Buffalo took it to him in game one. Game two, Montreal, they looked like the Canadians of old. They were focused. They were calculated. They went at the Buffalo Sabres and they dominated that game. They took a big win. Going into game three, I did not know what to expect. Because would it be an opposite case where Buffalo maybe thought they had this series in the bag because they dominated in game one? Maybe they thought going into game two, well, this will be easier than we thought. So the mental preparation wasn't there. They took Montreal a little too lightly. Bowen Byram, I think it was after game two, or maybe it was after game one. He made the very, very, and they mentioned it on the broadcast a couple times, so you probably heard it, but stay with me. It's a very clever and just thoughtful thing that he said. And this is a Stanley Cup champion, by the way. So one of the few guys on the Buffalo Sabres with Stanley Cup pedigree is saying this. And this is the mindset that most players have because you live and die on the game. And he says, you win game one, you think you're going to sweep. I mean, like, you're world beaters. Everything was right. And especially winning the way they did in game one, where they just, dominant is a strong word, but they took it to the Montreal Canadiens. They win 4-2, but it was a pretty good showing by the Buffalo Sabres. Then he says, you lose game two, and you think you're going to lose the next four and lose 4-1. And after game two, I would have had that same thoughts if I was a Buffalo Sabre player too. You got dominated. You think the Sabres dominated game one? The Montreal Canadiens took it to the Sabres. On home ice for the Sabres. Like they took it to the point where the Sabres fans were leaving the rink midway through the third period, and it was basically a Montreal Canadiens home ice game. Every time they scored, every time they did something good, it was ole, 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 ole. Like it was a Canadian environment. So coming into game three, like, who's going to show up? Is it the Montreal Canadiens that dominated game two? Is it the Buffalo Sabres that dominated game one? What will happen? Well, it was much of the same. From the drop of the puck, let me correct myself. After the first minute, it was much of the same. Because if you're the Buffalo Sabres coming into game three, your best player, Tage Thompson, after game two said, I played like trash. I was a disaster out there. And those are his words. You want him to play better. So coming into game three, what is the ideal situation? You obviously, you know, you start your best players. So it's Krebs, it's Thompson, it's Tuck. Let's go. Let's best 1v1, baby. Let's go. You're on the road. You want to throw your best at them. So the best case scenario is you get the early lead, you get Tage Thompson going, and you quiet the crowd, and then you can get into this game. You're not on your heels. You're pushing the pace. Well, that's exactly what happened in game three. Buffalo Sabres dominated in the first. I've got to stop saying that word. They get the early goal by Tage Thompson. He scores a rebound goal off the back dasher. Dobish playing the shot, misses an end. He gets the goal in the first minute, 58 seconds or so. That's exactly the start that you want. So you're going to build off that, right? You're going to go. Now, it was after that, a complete just, I'm taking you behind the woodshed, and I'm going to beat the living daylights out of you. And that's it. And it wasn't a case of, a couple ticky-tacky goals here. You know, maybe we got a goaltending controversy with the Buffalo Sabres. No, Alex Lyon played his heart out no pun intended, the heart of a lion. The guy was fantastic. There were so many times where I just was shaking my head going, this kid is standing on his head. He's getting no help whatsoever. And when you look at the shots, Montreal, they had 36 shots in game three. 36, that's a lot. Of those 36, no word of a lie. I know all of you probably watched the game, but if you didn't, of those 36, 25 were grade A chances. This wasn't a case of just the Carolina Hurricanes or the Philadelphia Flyers or those teams that like to just throw everything on the net and see what happens. The majority of Montreal's shots were grade A chances from inside the house, where Alex Lyon has to like stand on his head. He has to be sharp. He has to be always ready. His angles were fantastic. He wasn't giving up terrible rebounds at all. It was bing, bang, back of the net to the slot, east to west, backdoor shots, two on ones, making great saves. They were coming at him from all angles and he played fantastic. So the Montreal Canadiens scored six. They had one empty net goal. So Alex Lyon led in five, but this is not a case of, well, we can blame the goaltender. Well, who's to blame? We'll get to that in a second. So Tage Thompson gets on the board. And obviously, to answer Alex Newhook, the bane of the Buffalo Sabres' existence, scores the game-tying goal. And it's funny, when you look at Stanley Cup champions, it's always, well, you know, the top guys are the top guys. They'll get their points. But it's the secondary scoring that wins Stanley Cups. People say that it's, you know, been beat to death, because it's true. You very rarely win a Stanley Cup without having some guys step up. One or two guys that maybe did not do it in the regular season that just caught fire and just were scoring out of their mind. For the Montreal Canadiens, this seems to be Alex Newhook. And this is, you know, he's not a terrible player, but this is a third line energy role guy who throughout his career has not put up more than 15 goals in his career. That's his max. He's been in the league for five, six, 7 years now. That he's got five goals now in 10 games. This is incredible. So this is the Montreal Canadiens guy. The Vegas Golden Knights, they have Brett Howden. He's playing out of his world. But when Alex Newhook is on the ice, he's a difference maker. I was watching. They said he had 15 shot attempts, 16 shot attempts. Everything was going on net. So everything seems to be clicking for this guy. He's the guy who ties it up for the Montreal Canadiens. They get into the intermission. And this is the part that scares me for the Buffalo Sabres. Because it's okay to get dominated. You know, teams, you get on your heels. Things don't go right. You're chasing the game. Things happen. But this is where I start to get worried. You adjust. You try to match lines. You figure out what went wrong. And you come out in the second period and you have a pushback. You have a response. I'm thinking this will happen for the Buffalo Sabres, because going into the locker room as a player, you go, okay, shit. Like, we got outplayed. But guess what? It's 1-1. We're in a good spot. I know the conversations that they're having in the locker room. They're going, okay, boys, we're okay. Relax. That was their best. They will not get any better than that. And that was our worst. And it's 1-1. This is our game. Let's go out. We just need to have a response. So the drop of the puck for the second period, I'm thinking pushback. Buffalo's time to take the play, to carry the game a little bit, get Dobish on his heels, play physical on Lane Hudson, you know, get in Montreal's grill. I could not have been more disappointed. And I'm not going for anybody. Well, I am. Listen, I'm going for the Sabres. I know I'm an alum of both teams. My last NHL game was played with the Canadiens. I played 2 years with the Buffalo Sabres. I grew up watching the Sabres, okay? St. Catharines, Ontario, I used to go to the old auditorium all the time. So I'm going for the Sabres. So I'm hoping for a pushback. No, it's just chance after chance after chance after chance. And Buffalo was on their heels the whole entire time, making bad passes, making bad plays. Montreal just at will entering the zone, at will doing everything they want. Montreal would have a D-zone faceoff. They would win the faceoff. And then all of a sudden, it's like a 2-on-1. 5 seconds later, it's like, what the hell is happening? Finally, they broke the dam. And it's Cole Caulfield, who hadn't scored in a million years. The 51-goal scorer needed to get off the schneid. And he had glorious chances in this game, but could not find the back of the net. Lane Hudson just gave him a tap-in earlier in the game, and he missed it, duffed it wide behind the goaltender. He finally gets on the board on the power play. And it was just like, it was one of those power plays where you just sensed it was going, like, who was it? Samuelson broke his stick. Greenway gave him his stick, and he didn't have a stick, so it was pretty much a 5-on-3. And when that power play's humming, when it's Suzuki and Caulfield and Demidov and Hudson and Slakovsky, it's just like all five guys have the puck on a rope, and they can do anything with the puck that they want. And there's no weakness on that power play, so it's not like, oh, it goes to the point, pressure that guy. It's in the corner, pressure that guy. Let's leave this guy open. There's no luxury for the Sabres on this Montreal power play. Everybody's very dangerous. Everybody's very crafty with the puck. And lo and behold, it's winding down. They've been in the zone for a minute and a half, and Cole Caulfield gets a gift in front of the net, a beautiful pass by Lane Hudson, wide open gaping net again, and he scores. 6 minutes into the second period. Pushback for Buffalo? Nah. It's the same. It's the same. Typically, you know, there's a letdown when a team scores. They just go, okay, here we go. We got the lead. The foot was on the gas for the Montreal Canadiens. Martin St. Louis has these guys just humming. And they're just all of them just throwing the puck at the net. Beautiful passes. They weren't even challenged in their own zone. It's not like Buffalo would sustain pressure for a couple shifts in a row. It was Montreal, and that was it. They would get glimpses, a shift here and there, mostly the Shane Doan line. Zach Benson, those guys, you know, they got some energy, but they didn't find the back of the net. Zachary Bolduc gets the 3-1 goal. Then they get another power play, and Lane Hudson, again, dancing on the blue line, finds Juraj Slakovsky with a beautiful, I don't want to say beautiful, a nice tip. It hits his stick, hits his pants behind Lyon. It's 4-1. And you go, damn, okay, here we go. Those three goals were scored like in a 6-minute span, and it was just the place was rocking. Buffalo had no chance to come back, I thought. But then they get a power play, and you go, okay, well, here we go. You know, there's 5 minutes left in the period. We get one here. Maybe we have a chance. And poor Rasmus Dahlin. And I'm critical of the Buffalo Sabres a lot, rightfully so, because they were absolutely awful. Rasmus Dahlin, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, he played fantastic. I love Rasmus Dahlin. He played his ass off. He was trying. It seemed like he was trying to put the whole team on his back, but he just could not do it. They're too heavy. They're too big. But you could just tell he was frustrated. He wants to win so bad. And when he gets the puck, he feels bad passing it because he knows he won't get it back because the guy who gets it will probably turn it over. Anyways, they're on the power play. Nice screen in front of the net. I believe it was Josh Doan. He picks a corner, posts it in. It's 4-2. And then they plant that seed in my chest, that little mustard seed. I'm like, maybe we've got a chance here. Maybe. We can make something happen. We go into the intermission, and I'm thinking the same things after the first period. Regroup. We're only down by two. Get that next goal, and then maybe we can pull the goalie and pull this one out, get to overtime. Third period starts, and it's the same thing. It's the same damn thing. Montreal's all over them. Teschier gets on a 2-on-1. Kirby Doc throws in the rebound. It's 5-2. And then, of course, they pull the goalie with like 5 minutes left. And lo and behold, who is it? It's Alex Newhook. Scores the empty netter. He wins. Or they win. That's his fifth goal. It's just, it's a clinical just destruction of the Buffalo Sabres. And then just to put the cherry on top of the sundae, they try to, you know, mix it up at the end of the game, as you do if you're the losing team. You try to get some semblance of momentum going into the next game. You try to just impose your physical will. That's the only thing you can do at this point. So they mix it up a little bit. And Arbor Jack guy just one punches Sam Carrick. I know he went down easy, but just from an optic standpoint, the Canadians love it. He drops him with one punch and he's just smiling. And Arbor Jack, I like the guy, but they're just making him out to be like a world killer in this series. Ah, oh, there's the sheriff, you know, calming things down again. That's what he's here for. He's a super tough guy, but like, let's pump the brakes here a little bit. So he dummies Sam Carrick. They lose the game. Going into game four, if you're the Buffalo Sabres, this is what needs to happen at the beginning of the game. Logan Stanley, who had a shitty game. So pardon my language. He had a terrible game. Terrible turnover, I think it was for the third goal. He gets the puck, tries to skate up the ice for some reason instead of just headmanning it right away. Tries to pass it over to Peyton Krebs on his backhand, which is always a terrible move when you're over 6'6". Skies the pass, 3 feet in front of him. Montreal gets it, goes back the other way and scores to make it 3-1 or 4-1. I think it was 3-1. Yeah, it was 3-1. He breaks his stick, rightfully so. It was a terrible pass, terrible play, terrible thought process. Just get the puck out of his hands. Going back to what needs to happen for game four, he needs to fight Arber Jacki in the first shift. If he's not on the ice in the first shift, the first period. That's the response that Buffalo needs to have. I think that's the only way, and I know it's not the only way, but that would be a very effective way for the Sabres to just shake off game three and game two. Stand your ground. Let's go. They're dominating you physically. They're dominating you on the scoreboard, offensive zone time, in the faceoff circle, everything. You have to do something to buck the momentum. And the quickest and easiest way to do that is for Logan Stanley to just set the tone early and call out Arber Jacki. You were the first guy on the ice for the change. You look Martin St. Louis in the eye and you say, give me Jacki. Let's go. Let's go right now. He will put Jacki on the ice and you fight him. That's it. And then win, lose, or draw, you have to stand up for yourself, because if things keep going the same way, you'll be gone in two games. Montreal is better right now. You have to do something to show confidence in your team to say, hey, let's go. Not anymore. And you got to quiet down Arber Jacki. Shut that guy up. That's what I would do. I would go talk to Lindy Ruff today and say, Lindy, let me do this. You don't have to start me, but second or third shift, when it's a face-off, anywhere on the ice, other than maybe the offensive zone, get me out there. I will challenge him, and I will make sure everybody sees me challenge him. And if he doesn't fight, good. We have momentum. But if we do fight, there you go. We'll get something from it. That's just me being a barbarian. But I think that would be a very effective way for the Sabres to just show some semblance of heart. Because right now, damn, did they look bad in the D zone. And I know it's not me, but the amount of shots that Montreal got in the house where no one was around the guy in front of the net is laughable. And I don't know if it's a case of Buffalo trying to do too much, trying to cover for their guy, and everybody's just going to the puck and just panicking. But it needs to change. Lindy needs to make some adjustments, maybe lineup adjustments. I don't know what needs to happen, but you cannot give up so many grade A chances in front of the net where no one is around their guy. No one at all. It needs to change. It's not good enough in this series, and it will definitely not be good enough versus the Carolina Hurricanes, who are a solid team and will take advantage of that. And it sure as hell won't be good enough in the Stanley Cup final versus the Avalanche or the Wild, whoever comes out of the West. A couple more things with these teams before we move on to the Vegas Golden Knights and Anaheim Ducks. But I want to say sorry to Ivan Demidov. And sorry to a certain extent. He still hasn't scored. He still needs to do more. But damn, does he look good. Like, doesn't he look good? Like, he looks good. There's a couple guys in the Canadiens who stand out to me, and he's one of them. Obviously, Lane Hudson is the guy on this team, but the other guy is Ivan Demidov. He looks so good. You know, Alex Newhook, gosh, when he gets that puck, he's so creative. He's fearless, too, with the puck. The passes he makes, I'm like, damn, I would never in a million years do that puck in men's league. No idea what, no chance would I make that pass. He's so good. I got Guy Carbonneau coming on. I don't know if I said it already or the podcast that I gassed up, but he's coming on this week. I want to talk to him about Cole Caulfield, so I won't get too much into this, but Caulfield finally scored. He was not noticeable whatsoever in this game. I know they win 6-2. They were dominant. It was not Cole Caulfield at all. Just from, you know, a standard observer, the guy was pedestrian at best. So I'm going to ask Guy Carbonneau, what the hell's going on? You know, Guy was not that guy, but he was one of those guys for the Canadians back in the day when they won their cups. Why is this happening? Is he, you know, hurt? Have you heard anything? Is he just feeling the pressure a little bit? Second round, uncharted territory for him. So I want to know what the thought process is for a young kid like Cole Caulfield, who puts up 51 in the regular season. And all of a sudden now in the playoffs, they played 10 games. I think he has three goals. Not good enough. Not nearly good enough. So Buffalo needs to work on their D zone. Montreal keeps doing what they're doing. Demidov, mea culpa. You look great, kid. It'd be nice if he scored. He rang one off the crossbar. Whew, a hell of a shot. And Alex Lyon, just keep doing what you're doing. You know, your numbers might not look that good. I know. You played fantastic. And then the rest of the D, other than Dahlin, play better. Let me touch on Owen Power a little bit. Does he bother me as much as he You know, does he bother you as much as he bothers me? Is he cut from the same cloth as an Austin Matthews? He doesn't look like he has a heart. He does not look like he cares at all. And it bothers me. Each scrum, each time the camera's on him, every time he has the puck, he's losing battles. He's a super skilled defenseman. Don't get me wrong. Like, the guy's fantastic, but damn, like, show some passion. The second round of the NHL playoffs, you've never been here before. You think you'd be excited. He needs to, and I know you can't just give this to a player, but he needs a little bit of sandpaper in his game. He needs to just be a jerk. So, like, you're 6'7", buddy. Like, let's go. Like, impose yourself on somebody. Like, come on, get mad. Get angry, like The Rock used to say, or his trainer, the Mick. Come on. He doesn't have it. It's so annoying to watch him play. I'm like, just throw him down. Like, straight arm him. Let's go. He doesn't want to, like, every scrummy's thing. It's like, come on, man. Like, do it. Stand up for yourself. Let's go. Like, Connor Timmins sucked last game. Samuelson. All the D need to play better. Rasmus Dahlin aside, he had a good game. All right, moving on. Vegas Golden Knights, Anaheim Ducks. Game 4. Gosh, can you believe Carolina's already on to the third round? And, like, they just played game 3, Buffalo, and now this is game 4. Like, Carolina's going to be out of action for 3 weeks, it seems like. But anyways, game 4, Vegas Golden Knights bounces back. They were down one rip. They were up 2-1 going into this game. Anaheim needs to win to make this a series. Joel Quenneville, unlike Lindy Ruff, made a lot of adjustments. A lot of players coming in and then out of the lineup. It worked. It absolutely worked. He revamped their power play. It worked. They were very effective. They were scoring goals. Anaheim bounces back in a big way. It was a great game. I don't think, Vegas did anything too wrong. Carter Hart had his first off game where I felt like there was a couple goals where it's like, you should have had that one. The Killorn goal, the Granlin goal, I think both of those were relatively weak. He should have had both of those in my eyes. But what am I know? He had a great first, 6-7 games of the playoffs. Then he finally threw down a stinker. But other than that, I think everybody played good. The Knights played solid. The Ducks played solid, but the Ducks were better. They were energetic. The crowd was behind them. The young guys were really, really on point. Beckett Seneke, you had Leo Carlson. The guys were buzzing. John Carlson, it's just a fountain of youth on the West Coast. But for me, the guy he stands out every time I watch the Anaheim Ducks was Mikael Granlin. He played great. And I went and looked at his stats and I went and looked at his history. The guy, like, why can't he? Well, let me see what he makes here. I don't even know what he makes. Why can't a guy like Mikael Granlin, who just puts up points and is a solid player year after year after year after year, why has he bounced around so much in his career? I don't get it. Do teams not want to invest in this guy? Do they not want to pay him, a long-term contract, 8 years, $7 million? I just don't get it. The Ducks got him 7 years. I don't know where he signed that contract, but let's see. 3 years. They signed him 3 years, $7 million. The Minnesota Wild did, right? No, the Ducks did. Pat Verbeek did that in July 1st, 2025. But you guys, he's played for the Wild for 8 years. He played for the Predators for 4 years. Then he went to Pittsburgh, San Jose for a couple, Dallas, Anaheim. This guy is as good as they come for a second-line guy. He's not going to light the world on fire and score, 80, 90, 100 points. But what he does do, he gets 60 points consistently. He's great on the power play. He's solid in the D zone. He's a do-everything type player, and he's the type of guy you want on your team in the playoffs. And I don't... It's a luxury right now for the Anaheim Ducks. But how the hell does this guy keep just bouncing around from team to team to team? It seems like for his whole career, he's 33 years old right now and he's been on 7 teams. It just doesn't make sense to me. But anyways, back to the Anaheim Ducks. He's the guy on this team. He absolutely is that guy. And I know, like I mentioned, they have the young players. He's the one who is the straw to the Anaheim Ducks' drink. I love the way he's been playing. And last night he puts a goal on the board. He does everything this team needs. And obviously the young guys, like I said, are doing, but just what a hell of a game. Anaheim answers back. They win 4-3. Thomas Hertl finally gets off the schneid, scores his first goal in 29 games. Good for him. Maybe that is a good sign for the Vegas Golden Knights moving forward, but great series. Absolutely great series. I want to touch on Mitch Marner a little bit. 16 points in 10 games for the Ducks. That's fantastic. And people say, oh, he's finally had his coming out party. He was great in Toronto in the playoffs. I know his, elimination games weren't that solid and he didn't score as many goals as he probably wanted to in the playoffs, but the guy's a point per game guy in the playoffs. Last year he had 13 and 13 2 years before that, he had 14 and 11. There were some years that weren't as good. I think, you know, 23, 24, he had 3 points in seven games. It's the goals that aren't there, but the guy's not a natural goal scorer. I know he got a hat trick in this offseason, but you take that away, he's only got 3 goals in 10 games. So he's a good playoff performer. I just think people are amplifying this because, yes, he's away from Toronto. Yes, Vegas is winning. Yes, they'll maybe win this series and they'll move on to the Western Conference Finals. So it's fun to contrast Mitch Marner in Vegas versus Toronto, the unceremonious leaving of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I said it for years when he was with Toronto. He's the best player on that team. So the idea that he's going to Vegas and all of a sudden, like, he's untapped this hidden talent and he's just all of a sudden unlocked all these playoff skills that he never had in Toronto, it's not true. He was very good in Toronto in the playoffs. Not good enough. They didn't win enough, but he was good. The guy put up almost a point per game in the playoffs for the Leafs. And it's just carrying over now for the Vegas Golden Knights. The only thing now is he's got a good team. Like, he is on a very good team. And the funny thing is, he's not playing with super skilled players like a Matthews or a Nylander or a Tavares or a Knies or these guys. He's got Brett Howden. He's got, you know, William Karlsson. Good players, but not superstars. And he's still putting up crazy points. So it just shows you he's finally on a team that knows how to win. He's got a goaltender that's decent. Not, you know, lighting the world on fire. He's a decent goaltender. Pretty good defense who doesn't make glaring mistakes. Some good offensive-minded defensemen and some good defensive-minded defensemen. And forwards who know how to win. Forwards who know how to battle. Forwards who aren't scared to get their nose dirty a little bit. Forwards who know how to win. That's it. And I think he's thriving in this environment. So it's not like he's a bad player or he's all of a sudden found something. This is Mitch Marner. He's just surrounded by guys who know how to play hockey in the playoffs. So it's cool to see a good player in a good environment and what they can do with that. And not to mention John Tortorella seems to be doing pretty good. So yeah, Mitch Marner leads the league in points in the playoffs. He's got 16 points in 10 games. And how sweet, I mentioned it, what, a couple weeks ago. How just bittersweet would it be for Toronto? Not even bittersweet. It would be a punch in the nuts for Toronto if he wins the cup and wins the Conn Smythe. That would be just so great. All right, moving on. I want to do a little thing where I talked about, you know, how important Marner is for the Vegas Golden Knights, how important Lane Hutson is for the Montreal Canadiens. I want to talk about the most important player for each team, in my eyes. And I'm going to breeze through this pretty quick. But when you look at most important player, it's not the best player always. Sometimes it is. But it's the guy who, if he's gone, this team will lose. I'll start with the Colorado Avalanche. And in that case, it is Nathan MacKinnon. He is the most important player for that team. I think if he's gone, he's done. That team is done. He is just far and away the heartbeat of that team. When you go to the Minnesota Wild, their team they're playing, I want to say Quinn Hughes, right? That's the obvious answer. I don't think it is. I think when Quinn Hughes is on his best, they don't win. You need Kirill Kaprizov to be the difference maker on the Minnesota Wild. When they win, Kaprizov is playing fantastic. When they lose, he's not that guy. Quinn Hughes, I think, has been great throughout, and they've lost games and they've won games. Kaprizov, in order for the Wild to win, he needs to be their best player. So he is vitally important for them to win. The Vegas Golden Knights, I think it's Mitch Marner. Obviously. You know, Mark Stone's out of the lineup. He is a difference maker. He is noticeable every time he's on the ice. He could have easily had 4 or 5 assists last game. He's just setting up guys with grade-A opportunities all the time. And he puts the puck in terrific position. He's so fun to watch. Like, he's just so patient. He's such a good player. The Ducks, I said it was Mikael Granlund. I know the young guys are great. I know the guys in the back end are super solid. Jackson Lacombe is so incredibly good. He's so incredibly good. The Ducks are going to be good for a long time. But in my eyes, it's Mikael Granlund. The Canes, I don't know. You know, it's definitely not Aho or Svechnikov or any of these guys. Is it Stankoven? I think it's Logan Stankoven. He's the guy. Or him or Gostisbehere. I think those two guys are vitally important for that team to succeed. The Sabres, to me, that guy is Josh Norris. I know he's got a decent line with Zach Benson and Josh Stone. He needs to start producing. They're getting chances. They're getting zone time. But he needs to up his game. So Josh Norris for the Buffalo Sabres needs to do more. And then obviously that second line for the Sabres has been absolutely invisible. Zucker, McLeod, and Quinn. It would be a luxury if they would just show up and do something. But to date, they've done absolutely nothing. And then we'll round it out with the Montreal Canadiens. It's Lane Hutson. The guy is just the best player on that team. Even with Cole Caulfield not scoring, Nick Suzuki kind of pedestrian, Slakowski not doing much, it's Lane Hutson. The guy is so incredibly good. Dobish is playing great, but it's Lane Hudson's team. Right. That's it. I was going to do NHL awards. I think all the nominees, actually, they did a good job. There's no glaring omits. There's no glaring what? See, now I need to stop. I've done too many podcasts here tonight. I'm going to keep this one. Great job. There's nothing I see needing with the NHL awards. I will be back later this week with Guy Carboneau. I appreciate everybody's support. Thank you for everything. I will talk to you later. Cheers, everybody.